Explain. Caesar, I know nothing of the crime and little of the canner device. But what little I know have I already told to Martin. Mason took his time considering. Three breaths, four, each making the slightly metallic iron gray of his imperial suit shift in the light as mountains change their shadows with the crawling of the day. Yes, Mycroft may serve Vivian tonight. Chair Cosulla, lawful guardian of servicer kind, nodded her consent. Right, she clapped her hands. Vivian will work. You'll meet with Perry. I'll go be calm at people. I'll join you, if I may, Spain volunteered. She smiled. That would be a great help, thank you. His Majesty Isabel Carlos II offered his arm to Danae.
You should come with us, Princess. Perry doesn't trust you.
Danae clung more tightly to her husband's sleeve. Must I? Mason gave the necessary answer. You cannot come, just as Spain and the censor cannot come. My son is employed directly by the six hive leaders. The Prime Minister will expect this meeting not to involve outsiders. But Perry is the outsider, the princess pouted. His Majesty is the rightful head of Europe. Everyone knows that. Caesar is right, my dear. Ando transferred Danae to the king's arm, as when one coaxes a hooded hawk from one glove to another. Do what you can to calm people while we meet. We don't need any rumors. Danae nodded her consent, then prepared her smile for the crowd as a hunter prepares his bow. Like the empresses and queens of old, Danae cannot abide being useless, but will accept exclusion when another duty waits. Imagine Empress Livia, waiting in the palace while Augustus forges treaties in the Senate House, content since her offices too throng with clients who spread her imperious touch from Spain to Syria. Shall we? Cosulla lingered to give Vivian's hand a farewell squeeze. I'm here. Brillist Institute headmaster Felix Faust arrived, huffing and wheezing like an old wolf, no longer big nor bad. His usual Gordian sweater was not formal enough to be worn on such a night, but the weave of his green suit coat was textured to mimic its markings, so passing Brillists could still read him as 2555111101. Faust's flesh always seems to be decaying. Pallid, European skin and a wasted, hairless body, as if the brain which lurks beneath that bare skull were a parasite, sucking the life and moisture from its host.
You must let me come, he gasped out. I saw Perry heading toward the miniatures room. Who else is coming?
His eyes shot from face to face, keen as microscopes. Ando and Mason, fine choices. The Duke and King joining Briar on crowd duty, good. A deep breath and a smile.
Isn't this whole affair magnificent? I just called J.E.D.D. Mason. Do you know what they said? Excuse me, Headmaster. Something important is happening.
I haven't heard our J.E.D.D. call anything important since Spain here fell from politics. Isn't it wonderful?
No offense, Your Majesty.
How shall I describe these princes' faces as they hear that news? Imagine the ancient Senate hearing word that Caesar has just crossed the Rubicon. They do not yet know how much destruction this will spell, but it cannot end in nothing.
Come, I'm eager to hear what you tell Perry.
Faust herded Mason and Mitsubishi toward the side door, like a teacher counting students on a field trip. The old headmaster has a privileged ease in dealing with the other powers, since he is last among equals, resting content in 7th place on 7-10 lists. Many say the only bad choice Thomas Carlyle ever made was his last, decreeing that henceforth the leadership of Gordian would be selected by Brill's Institute. The Institute chose well, unfailingly, but members who were not Brillists felt uncomfortable under their sway. And, as Gordian and Brillist became synonyms, so Gordian dwindled from the largest hive
to second smallest. Legend says that Emperor Constantine, converted on his deathbed, willed the Roman Empire to the Christian Church, and, in one act, ensured both that church's immortality and doomed Europe to 19 centuries of wars for God. Just so, Carlyle's deathbed embrace of Adolf Richter Brill strengthened and crippled Gordian. Others may call it a mistake, but I call it the wisest move Carlyle ever made, for if Gordian's growth had not been checked, by now its matchless popularity would have doomed us to that dread death knell of peace, majority. "The rest of you enjoy the party," old Faust called to the others. "Ganymede, snipers outside preparing to catapult themselves over your east wing, using a motor which I think was part of your drawbridge until a few minutes ago. You may want to go, voice an opinion." The Duke broke into such poetic French profanity that those who understood could not help but gaze in awe. As the others returned to the Grand Hall, Headmaster Faust, a human tugboat, shoved the Emperor and Mitsubishi Chief Director out the side door to a quieter gallery and onward toward the salon where the outsider waited. Here only quiet souls clustered, pretending to browse the Duke's collection of busts of unknown persons while they watched the news over their trackers. The three hive leaders might have traversed the hall in safety, if not for a tiny, brave impediment. 9 years old and child plump beneath her junior scientist squad uniform, who planted herself in Mason's path like Lancelot upon the bridge. "Are you the Emperor?" she asked. He crossed his arms, the black sleeve darker as it fell in shadow. "Yes." "Are you rich?" "My empire is." "Can we have a new atomic oven for our science club? We picked out the one we want. It only costs 2 million euros, and it can split the atom." The Emperor sighed down at his tiny petitioner. "Write up a grant proposal, and we'll see." What stifled pain, that sigh. What weight for those of us who have enjoyed the gloomy privilege of hearing Mason voice his thoughts. He will not say it to this child so full of aspirations, but he thinks it when he hears her boast. "It can split the atom." No, it can't. Cornell Mason is the world's most undeluded man. What are humanity's great dreams? To conquer the world? To split the atom? When Alexander spread his empire from the Mediterranean to India, we say he conquered the world. But he barely touched a quarter of it. We lie. We lie again when we say we split the atom. Atom was supposed to be the smallest piece of matter. All we did is give that name to something else we can split, knowing that there are quarks and tensors, other pieces smaller that we cannot touch, and only these deserve the title atom. Man is more ambitious than patient. When we realize we cannot split a true atom, cannot conquer the whole earth, we redefine the terms to fake our victory, check off our boxes, and pretend the deed is done. "Alexander conquered earth," we tell ourselves. "Rutherford split the atom. No need to try again." Lies. Cornell Mason is the unquestioned master of more than 3 billion voluntary subjects, 100 times the ruler Alexander was, but knows he has not conquered the earth, and never will. If all humanity were so unwilling to lie to ourselves, we might not have given up on our great dreams. Complacent reader, we no longer aim for earth, nor atom, but Chapter the 13th. Perhaps the Stars. There is one race in whom ambition flows still. I do not mean the humanists' lust for fame, Masons for power, or the driving need of Europeans and Mitsubishi to prove their nation strat superior to one another,
Those ambitions are appetite or envy by finer names. What I speak of is the primordial ambition which brought us from the trees, which launched the first ships across then infinite oceans, and drove one brave ape to approach the heavenly destroyer, fire, and make it ours. Reader, we no longer aim for earth nor atom, but so long as the utopians still live and breathe, they will not give up on our last great dream. The stars.
I sit on your knees, bitch, now!
Stay calm, friend. Think, you don't want to do this.
Oh, I do want to do this. In fact, I think we're all going to take turns doing this. What do you all think, everyone? Si, dámenos ya, puto!
Laughter, pregnant with threat, followed the words up through a kitchen window behind me. There were five or six drunks, by the sound of it, close by the back wall of this low wing of the palace where the lights of Ganymede's party did not reach.
That's right. We're all going to have a turn, though whether we take turns getting a blow or kicking the shit out of you astro-turds is your choice.
The chefs around me froze, none wanting to acknowledge the atrocity transpiring below. Such things are supposed to be extinct in our enlightened age, but if civilization continues another millennium, another 10, drunk people will never become less stupid.
We're going to walk away now, said a second victim, sober, if afraid.
Think where we are and how fast security will jaunt in if something happens. You can walk away too.
Jodo la policía!
You try to get away, and we'll ditch your trackers in the trash and haul you up them hunting grounds. Nobody will find you out there, not for days.
Now down on your knees and suck it, you bitch, before I go Mycroft Cano on your ass.
By now, you are urging me to intervene. I did. But in return, we sacrifice listening to the rest of the party upstairs. All I know is that Perry consented. I leapt out the open window, and a controlled swing from the scalloped railing landed me in the gravel between the marauders and their prey. My fall was almost silent, and I landed on all fours like an animal, so with my dappled uniform of gray and beige, I must have seemed like a beast.
Carajo! ¿Qué es esto?
The attackers shrieked, though their panic faded fast.
It's just a servicer.
I rose, neither threatening nor shying back, just set to spring. These two were summoned by the Emperor himself.
Shall I call Caesar?
Or would you prefer I call Police Commissioner General Hector Papadilius? I could see the aggressors now. Five humanists, their jackets bright with sailor stripes and sport team patches, reeking from a long day's revels. We watched each other silently, as stags face off across a clearing, debating with eyes alone whether or not to break the woodland peace with war.
It's not worth it, their leader judged, a sinewy young thing who probably deserved the champion colors on his wrestler's cap. Come on, let's go get seats for the fireworks.
In my place, reader, would you have offered your silent thanks to chance or God?
Are you injured?
I asked as I turned to the pair behind me.
Untouched, thanks, Mycroft.
In the darkness of the alley, the long contours of their utopian coats glowed timidly, like ghosts threatening to vanish if I glanced away. Confess, reader, you too rush to the window to see when they walk by and point them out to eager friends.
Look at the utopian.
Do I assume too much? Perhaps you have never seen one. You may not be my contemporary, but a distant biographer, culling my faded history for data on one of our great men. Utopians are common now, but by history's standards they must be ephemeral, winged ants born to pioneer new colonies who cannot linger long among the workers. How shall I describe these aliens of the past to one whose world is no longer so colorful? Their coats were more than hive markers. They were windows to another world. Griffin cloth was developed for camouflage, a flexible, fabric-like surface which could display in real time the video feed of objects on the other side. making an object properly equipped with griffin cloth invisible.